include a dull headache or a sore jaw. You could have teeth that are painful or loose from severe grinding. This can lead to fractures in your teeth. Your dentist can fit you with a mouth guard to protect your teeth during sleep. If stress is the cause, you need to find a way to relax. Physical therapy, muscle relaxants, counseling, and even exercise may help reduce tension. Don't make your teeth the brunt of your stress. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. To find out more about your dental health, visit ADA online at ada.org.
Oh, yes. It's WUSB Stony Brook you're listening to. It's 6:01, time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, how are you doing, E?
Okay, I'm all right. I haven't been all right. I've been kind of sick the last couple of days, but getting over it, you know, and getting back into the swing of things. And sometimes that's necessary to get things done. And I feel like, you know, we need to be at 100% in order to survive the next couple of weeks, because it's going to get pretty intense, you know, and already I'm feeling a little bit down. I'm feeling a little bit pessimistic, because I think that's being drilled into our heads that this election isn't going to go so well. And I don't know why that would be the case. I'm not sure why that would be the case. I'm reading stories that say everything from, you know, Republicans are registering or actually voting early more than Democrats, which doesn't necessarily mean that more Democrats won't vote in the end, but it kind of suggests that. And then, you know, you look at all these polls of various races that just seem so obvious. You have, like, you know, the Trump supporter, and then you have the person who challenges things, and the person who challenges things always seems to be behind in the polls, and it doesn't make any sense. And then you see people believing all the crap that Trump is spewing and pointing to the economy that he has little to do with, as if that's an accomplishment, and ignoring all the bad things. And I realize, you know, this might actually work for them. They might actually pull it off. And like I said last week, you know, if it doesn't go well, I think a lot of people are going to give up and think that there's just no way through. With all the cheating, you know, the gerrymandering and voter suppression and all the other things that they do to get their way even when they're in the minority, you just at some point might think this isn't the way to do it. And that worries me. That worries me when people lose faith in the system.
Well, I would encourage people to have heart and don't give up. I would implore people, even if things don't go your way, they're going somebody's way, and try to, you know, there's a lot of people saying, throwing around common ground, and, you know, finding common ground and all this stuff. And, you know, in some areas that's possible. Other areas, we're at serious loggerheads, I think, politically, just in the divided nature. And all the stuff we've sort of mentioned in the past couple weeks, but I don't think I'm not as pessimistic. I understand your worry, but you know, if it goes bad for my team, I think people will be back on their feet. You know, doubling down, doing more of whatever's needed to be engaged. And same goes for people who may not, you know, have the same political tendencies that I do. You know, they'll lick their wounds and come back in some form or another. Hopefully, you know, with in my opinion, more platform issues and things that you know aren't as silly as the kind of things we talk about and spend so much time on now. But we'll see. And you know, the power is in the people's hands. This is our check. So it'll be very fascinating just to watch all the races, to see who comes out. You know, we caught some of the debates, and all that stuff is sort of this confluence of it is reaching a fever pitch or a crescendo, whatever you want to call it. And that's the kind of fun of this stuff. The months of campaigning is I think real tiresome for a lot.
You mentioned the debates, and okay, yeah, we did see we saw Elizabeth Warren, and she was really good. I don't even remember the person that she's running against. And I think that's one race, but she's already the incumbent, so she damn well better win that. But Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz, I saw that debate. And just to see, wait a minute, was that a debate or was, no, that wasn't town even hall. A debate. It was a town hall. He didn't show up. And that's the other thing. They don't show up. We see that locally. We see that on the national scale. Okay, so Ted Cruz isn't even there. Beto O'Rourke does this amazing presentation where he's talking about teaching his kids Spanish in Texas, and he is so enthused by the bilingual education they're getting and the multiculturalism. All these are now considered dirty words in apparently what the mainstream is. To see a guy like this, who, by the way, reminds me of RFK. It really does. And you know, I see good things for him in the future. But to say that he doesn't have a chance against Ted Cruz? Hell, man, we should have a chance against Ted Cruz. For God's sake, he's Ted Cruz.
I could beat Ted Cruz.
Anybody can. I mean, in a rational world, anyone can beat Ted Cruz. So you have a charismatic, intelligent, young, pretty
with it
guy. You know, yeah, you can tell he's a politician because he's shaking a lot of hands and. You know, he's kind of predictable and saying, oh, thank you for that question. And that's a great question. You know, he always does that. Yeah, okay, he's a damn politician. What do you expect?
Yeah, maximum flattery. And
to say this guy isn't leading, what world is this? You know, what world are we living in where that's the case? And that's what makes me pessimistic because, you know, you put all this good stuff forward and it's not enough. You know, what is it going to take? We have had this blithering idiot in the White House now for almost 2 years. And he's got a 47% approval rating? How is that possible? He's destroying the environment. He wants to wipe transgender people off the earth. Okay? He's racist. He called himself a nationalist yesterday. Let me tell you what nationalism is. Okay?
What is nationalism?
Well, nationalism has lots and lots of negative connotations. Well, first of all,
I love The National. It's a great program on the CBC.
No. It's not like that at all.
Really good.
Basically, critics of nationalism, and this comes straight from Wikipedia, so you know it's got something, some truth to it. Critics of nationalism, we're included in that, have argued it is often unclear what constitutes a nation or whether a nation is a legitimate unit of political rule. Nationalists hold that the boundaries of a nation and a state should coincide with one another. Thus, nationalism tends to oppose multiculturalism. And that is true. You know, you talk to people who consider themselves nationalists, and I don't know very many who call themselves that, but Trump called himself that yesterday. In doing so, nationalism serves to marginalize minorities who live within a nation state but do not share the necessary characteristics to be considered part of the nation. It can also lead to conflict when more than one national group finds itself claiming rights to a particular territory or seeking to take control of the state. So it's not a good road to go down. Yeah, call yourself a patriot. Call yourself, somebody who is proud to be an American. But nationalism has ugly ties to it. And how does he not know that, you know? It's
and is that something we need right now in this moment to get convey what you're where you're coming from? You know, it just seems too conveniently associated with a negative and historically kind of I don't know, not so good things.
Mm-hmm. Nationalism suppresses minorities, it places country above moral principles, and especially it creates a dangerous individual attachment to the state. You know who said that? This guy, Lord Acton, back in 1862. So this is not anything new, okay? Nationalism is not something to aspire to. It's closing yourself off. I thought we were past that. But apparently that is what's popular now. And, you know, all these Trump rallies every single day now, it appears. I mean, the only good thing about them is apparently he's not doing presidential type things where he could, you know, cause all kinds of mayhem and chaos. But it's also you talk about mobs. How is it that the left is actually being portrayed as the angry mob here? I wish we were an angry mob. I don't. I don't like mobs. I've never liked mobs, even mobs that I'm a part of. I don't like that. And I don't think the left is. I think the left is basically a whole bunch of different people that occasionally unite to agree on a particular issue. Not nearly enough. But if you want to look at a mob, go to a Trump rally. You know, you see an occasional video of one of these idiots. I'm sorry, I use harsh language because they offend me. But one of these idiots from the administration in a restaurant or something, whether it, you know, be Jeff Sessions or the vice president or DeVos, any of those people.
Sarah Sanders.
Yeah. You know, being shamed in a restaurant and that, you know, you turn to Fox News all of a sudden. Oh, it's the angry mob making life dangerous and threatening us. And then you see Nancy Pelosi being confronted by an angry mob, except look at the difference. You know, I saw the video from this as well. I don't know where exactly she was, but what the people were saying to her was, "You don't belong here. What are you doing amongst, really scary things like that. That's a mob where you're saying, what are you doing here? You don't belong in this crowd. the people shaming the administration are individual people shouting at them. Now, you might not like that, but that's what it is. I've never heard the phrase, you don't belong here. That's something that kind of scares me a little bit. And try showing up at a Trump rally wearing a Muslim headdress, for instance, or even being black, you know, or just anything that's not in the mainest of mainstreams. And you will feel what it's like to have a mob that might not like you or might be suspicious of you. That's what's scary. Yet somehow they've twisted the dialogue to make it like the people on the left are the ones that are intimidating. And yeah, you know, there are people that that shout louder. There are people that throw things. You'll find them in any crowd. But to be able to successfully label an entire philosophy as being of that ilk, that takes a special kind of skill. And we should be recognizing that, and we should be fighting that on its own level.
Yeah, the coded language and uniforms of whatever, you know, slogans or hats and these kinds of symbols, they become signs and ways of communicating and gathering. And so when the barrier to entry is whether you affiliate or associate with a code or a sign, whether it's language, you know, someone testing you on a certain issue by mentioning something and seeing how you react, those kinds of little things. Then when you don't answer or respond the right way or wear the right uniform, that you're then not a part of this crowd. It really speaks to the strict homogeneity of such a crowd that they only want their own. They don't want to be challenged by anything, and will feign victimhood at the earliest possible moment to keep that fear up. And that's one thing I think the media is getting right, is sensing the tone. I think over the weekend Trump was a lot lying about all kinds of things, and it was I think a well-placed theory that it's mainly about drumming up fear so that the base itself is fearful and goes out and acts, because they're comfort and resting on their laurels is a threat, especially if this blue wave is what we might hope it is.
Well, that's the thing. You know, what I'm hoping for is a 2-1 victory across the board, but I know I'm not going to get that. And now I'm wondering if we're even going to get a victory at all because of how skillfully these guys are playing the game. I mean, they have turned a bunch of refugees into terrorists. You know, they are actually afraid of people more than 1,000 miles away on foot walking in the general direction of our country. You know, women, children, people with canes, all kinds of hardship cases. And yet I'm hearing the words out of our administration, you will not get into this country. You know, that's threatening them. These are victims. These are people fleeing violence, fleeing poverty, fleeing all kinds of things. What our nation was supposedly founded for, what that damn Statue of Liberty says, you know? And here we are threatening them and turning them into the enemy. We should be honored that people want to come here. And can you imagine? Can you imagine the kind of citizen somebody would be if they walked through three countries to get here? That is something we should be inviting, not pushing away. I mean, Angela Merkel had the right idea when all those Syrian refugees showed up a couple of years ago and she welcomed them. Of course, she had to pay the price for that when you know, the right-wing nationalists went nuts. But that is the right thing to do. That is a humanitarian thing to do. That is what makes your country stronger. And the way it's being portrayed now, it's disgusting. Well, hearing what's being said to these people, I wish there was a door I could open to let them in, because they are better citizens than the people running this place right now.
And the lack of memory, the amnesia sort of that surrounds this as far as responsibility, and what I'm speaking to specifically is the sort of narco states in a lot of those Central and South American countries, and destabilizing effects that we've had. You know, that has never really looked at when we're talking about immigration, and it really impacts it a lot. You know, people have they have to live in the places that we're supporting and that we're you know, may have been enriched by our own predilection for different illegal substances. And that impact, it may not affect your life, you know, at the end of the day when you when you're not high anymore, but it certainly affects the places where people live, when there's corruption and other sorts of forces that lead to violence and lack of opportunity and all of these factors. No, all of that's thrown aside. Our role is tossed out, and really it's just boiled down and oversimplified as just the possibility that some other brown people will be in there that we don't like. And it's just really defies logic, but it's what we're faced with here.
The fear and the hatred is what's driving us, and it's just it's sickening to see it work. It should be condemned. And that's, you know, that's not open borders. That's not, you know, going easy on crime. That's none of that. That's simply going back to what our nation is supposed to be all about. And a situation like this, it's a humanitarian crisis. We should be caring about it. We should be doing something about it. I mean, think about this. Mexico, all these people are walking through Mexico now. It wasn't an issue. It wasn't an issue for Mexico to let them cross the border. I mean, it was for a little while, but they eventually got past the border because, you know, Mexico will give these people sanctuary if they ask for it and they can prove their case. Yeah, we should be doing the same thing. You know?
I thought they were at the border with Mexico. Have they?
Well, they're past it now.
Many have. Okay.
Yeah, it's up to about 7,000. But I don't think anything near that number will you know, at least not the same people will reach the American border. And that's not going to be until after Election Day. They're walking, for God's sake.
So that's why Pompeo is out today just now basically assuring people that
Did
they will not be
let in. Did you hear him? He was disgusting. My God. It was. And okay, what's Trump going to do? He's going to send the military to the border?
Yeah, and just pick them off right from the wall.
I'm sorry, but if that day comes, that's when this government loses all legitimacy. Not that anybody's going to care. Not that anyone's going to do anything, but you start doing things like that, and you do not deserve to be in power, let alone walking around free.
That's what I heard. I mean, what else is he saying? You know, that they will not – that's basically at all costs, whatever we have to do. That's pretty ugly. That's not an open hand. That's not a Ellis Island kind of attitude. And what about the Canadian border? What about that border?
Yeah, what about Canada? look at how Canada handles immigrants, handles refugees. You know, it's night and day, and you know, if we buy into this rhetoric, and actually believe these people are somehow a threat to us, you know, you might as well just give it all away because we are not the same country anymore.
Oh, and we can be bought with tax cuts.
Okay, and let me tell you about
that
tax cuts.
That makes it all better.
Tax cuts that cost $1.5 trillion that your kids are going to have to pay for, and tax cuts that don't last past a couple of years. And deductions that don't go past $10,000 anymore for property taxes. Yeah, it's not really a tax cut, okay? You might feel it for a little bit, a few months, but it's not going to last. And you know, the way they time it, the way these politicians do things, by the time reality hits, somebody else will be in power, and then they can point the finger at them, even though they have nothing to do with it. Just like Trump has nothing to do with the economy doing well, you can't just turn things around in a couple of years. It takes, you know, I'm not an economist. I don't claim to be, but I do know that much. I do know you can't just snap your fingers and fix things in a couple of years. It takes a lot longer than that. That's why it took George W. Bush 8 years to screw things up and have the crash in 2008.
Just wait till the Democrats win. Their victory will be like the automatic trigger for the next recession, right?
Yeah.
Stock market will be crashed. Everybody will pull anchor. They're already jumping ship.
They'll blame the Democrats.
Prior to January.
Because of all the carnage caused by what Trump is doing.
As soon as the results come in, everybody's going to be calling their banks and saying, all right, this is the plan.
And it doesn't stop there. You know, this whole nuclear treaty that he now wants to get out of with Russia – signed by Reagan. Ronald Reagan signed this in 1987. All right. And yeah, you can say that the Russians have violated the treaty. If that's true, then you call them on it and you make sure they don't violate the treaty, but you don't cancel the whole treaty. Because then you're literally putting us back in the Cold War. Because 1987, got news for you, that was the Cold War. So what about the people that say, but I thought Trump was allied with the Russians? How can you be criticizing him for doing something negative? Well, it's not that simple. It's not that simple. While the Russians may have played a part in helping Trump gain power, it does not mean that Trump is working for the Russians every single day. He's a tool of the Russians. I believe that. But the Russians certainly don't care if Trump succeeds. They care if they get what they want, like any country would. And Trump is pretty easy to maneuver. And this kind of thing, they can easily outplay us. It's a dangerous game for him to be playing. And he's probably one of the worst people to be playing that game.
Yeah, and this is at a time when we've casually talked about upgrading our nuclear systems and other, whether it's the existing infrastructure, changing some of the electronics and that kind of equipment related to the Minuteman system, or upgrading and making smaller, lower yield, more tactical nuclear weapons. Really, really kind of sinister stuff to be talking about in the same breath as leaving a treaty that was actually removing weapons from the sort of global cache of warheads. So it's, I guess, a slow creep, but victories in their view, which is just frightening. I mean, John Bolton having victories, not a fun thing to report, but you know, it's some kind of crass calculation, and you know, so they're looking at this threat and our posture, you know, at the same time that we're doing freedom of navigation in China. There was some stuff going on this week with that as well. So we're really well projected as far as the military goes, but
yeah,
the kind of future that they're preparing for is doesn't sound very peaceful.
No, it's not. And don't forget for a second that all of these things that are happening now will take a while to undo. I'm talking about pulling out the climate accord, canceling the Iran deal, this latest thing with Russia, all the social programs and nightmares that people are going through, turning ICE into jackbooted thugs and terrorizing people in their homes, families that have been here for decades. That's not going to go away overnight. And it's not going to go away at all if we just accept this or treat this as normal. And that's something that I just don't think people are getting. It's really it's really pretty sad. Hey, you know what? I want to open up phone lines so people can talk with us. But I also want to remind people that it's Radiothon. And I don't know if anyone's in the tally room, but we are in the middle of Radiothon. That means it's the fall 2018 Radiothon. This station survives on pledges. And if you want to pledge to us, you can either go to WUSB.FM and do that on the website, or you can call 631-632-6901. And hopefully somebody will answer in the tally room. And you can get T-shirts, you can get coffee mugs, you can get baseball caps, all kinds of other things. You can join the 90.1 Club, because that's our frequency, 90.1. Or you can join the 107.3 Club, because that's our other frequency, 107.3 FM. But if you want to call and be on the air, 631-632-9872 is our phone number, 631-632-WUSB. You can join the discussion. Although undoubtedly, and I welcome it, but undoubtedly, we'll get people supporting Trump calling us, or people that are anti-immigrant calling us. I don't know why that is. Why is that, people? Why is it that those are the only folks that really speak out? You know, maybe you could learn something from them. Maybe those are the people you should be taking notes about how they keep winning and the side that we purport to be on keeps losing. We're doing something wrong. I think that's pretty obvious, and we need to do better. So, you know, if you are a Trump supporter, hey, hats off to you, because whatever you're doing, it's working. But we intend to do everything possible to make sure it stops working. We just have to figure out what that is. Our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. We'd love to hear from you. And our tally people would love to hear from you, 631-632-6901. or WUSB.FM to keep this place on the air. And thank God there's a place like WUSB so we can speak our minds and so that you can speak your mind too.
Yeah, absolutely. And please, let's keep it in the abstract, I guess. We all have our personal stories and experiences, but I don't want to take, one, stub toe situation and apply an entire immigration policy to one little, somebody cut you off and they happen to look a certain way. That's not kind of really productive. I want to hear all kinds of opinions and so on, but we try to speak in the abstract about these issues and how it affects, a larger amount of people.
Well, there's way too much demonization, and I don't like to do that because, there are people who say, why even talk to somebody who's pro-Trump? And, the fact is, we know lots of people who are pro-Trump. We know lots of people who don't agree with us politically, but that doesn't make them bad people. But in our current political climate, that's what we're expected to do. And I don't want to go down that road. I think that's a very unhealthy thing to do. And I think that's how we got here in the first place, because we refused to listen and have conversations, make compromises. It's all possible to do that, but not if you feel like you're backed against the wall. And if you don't, go with your party, you're going to lose everything. That's not healthy. And that's how you get nothing.
Well, and I think I'm speaking just from my position. I think you would be welcome at a Democratic rally. I'm not so sure. I don't think I would feel so welcome at a Republican event in the current climate. But we have to kind of come to terms with that.
Well,
because we are all Americans at a certain point here.
Let me just step in there because, what you say is true. At a Trump rally, I would not feel welcome. But I would feel welcome in what is known as Trump country. And we have felt welcome.
Oh, that's
there.
True.
We've been in the Deep South. We were in Tennessee and... It was just so amazing, so nice, so incredible. We didn't talk politics with these people, but, if we had, that probably wouldn't have gone too badly. I think we could have a civil conversation. But in that mob mentality, I don't feel comfortable in that at all. So the fact that you can actually have conversations with people individually, that is a sign of hope. And we need to do that more. And we need to, hear each other out more, because there are things that I think we could all agree on, things that are bad, things that are good. There are so many compassionate people out there. And if you got to know the stories of those people trying to come here right now in Mexico and in other countries, you might be a bit more sympathetic. If you saw these people as not somehow threatening you, as actually enhancing your life, making things better, creating an environment where you can learn and you can contribute and the country itself gets stronger. Hey, we're not full. There's plenty of space here. There are plenty of things left to do. I don't know where this mentality comes from that these people are here to hurt us. This is how we founded this nation. And we can talk about the founding of the nation and the problems involved in that, but that's a whole other issue. But, it was supposed to be about basically the untrodden and the people that needed help,
downtrodden.
And giving them a downtrodden, whatever, and just basically, a new world, a new chance.
Well, I think another thing that's coming through here is that, we are better suited, I think, to have the discussion. I don't think the politicians at this point, they're playing a pretty, as I said, crass game, and they're going to stay polar. They're going to stay polar because that's the climate. That's the way these races are being done. So to actually work out these issues and talk about it and hear the other side, I think there's a lot more of that going on in the community.
Yeah, and you learn so much more when you talk to people you disagree with. We can get into that in a second. But I think we have a phone call. Again, our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. Is somebody on the line? Hello? Anyone? I hear my voice. Hello? Anyone there? Okay, maybe I didn't make it clear. In addition to calling, when we speak back, be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, and if you're having a medical emergency, don't call us.
Yeah, we can't really help.
Yeah, I mean, we'll basically be listening to wherever you are, but if you're not conscious, we can't help.
This is part of the problem, though. People who don't speak, people who feel like either their opinion doesn't matter or that it's just a waste of time. It's not. It really is not. And recent events, I think, prove that more than anything. It's the people that actually let their voices be heard that managed to set the tone and the agenda. You know, in England, they're having some second thoughts about Brexit. Hundreds of thousands of protesters opposed to the impending exit from the European Union marched through central London on Saturday, demanding a new referendum and to have a say in the government's final Brexit deal with the EU. There were young voters, mostly, who led the people's vote march to London's Parliament Square. Protesters say about 700,000 protesters were there. Metropolitan Police weren't able to comment on how many people were actually there, but it was a lot of people, regardless of who you believe. And I think that really says something as far as when something major like this happens, maybe you have like a secondary once you know more of the facts, as a kind of an "are you sure" dialogue. You know, if you want to erase your entire hard drive, doesn't your operating system say, "Are you sure? Y/N? You know, don't we deserve that as well?" And I think, you know, maybe a lot of people voted emotionally to leave the European Union. And now, you know, a couple of years later, they're starting to see what that might involve. And maybe we should ask the question again, what's the harm? And, you know, it's sad how many people don't automatically believe that's a good idea. You know, they say, oh, they already voted. You know, it's like you're trying to get away with something. They already voted. No, we can't go back. Sure, you can. You can go back if enough people say, yeah, let's rethink this. And it's just a shame that Jeremy Corbyn is not one of those people. You know, that guy is a wimp.
Especially because they're having trouble with it. Like, they can't seem to get through these negotiations. Right. Theresa May is like all like, you know, just it seems really disorganized as far as what she's actually articulating. It seems like it's constantly changing every time they change the subject or the issue that's being negotiated. So, yeah, if there was a lot more steadfast assuredness in that choice, but it doesn't seem to be panning out that way, and the people are kind of feeling it, I think.
Okay, we're going to give this person one more try. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead. Hello? Okay, so this is the state of USB listeners right now. Somebody thinks it's funny to just keep calling and not saying anything. You're not going to drive the dialogue here. You're not going to do that. So, you know, more people call in and then we'll go back to the phones. But until then, you know, I got to say I'm pretty disappointed. 631-632-WUSB. Do people care? If you don't care, so what? You know, it's going to go to hell. And it's going to go to hell a lot faster than you think it's going to go. We have a chance. We have a voice. We have a means of actually speaking and communicating and debating. That is so important. And if you don't do it, someone's going to do it for you.
Yeah, you're going to get the political and other climate you deserve.
Yeah, but we don't deserve it. You know, we deserve better. We're trying to get better. We really are. You know,
yeah, but we have to act as a populace, as a sort of a unified group of people and ideas. And when we're not actually hashing that out, it's where we become ineffectual.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's speaking about pathetic local stuff. Our local representative, Lee Zeldin, was supposed to have a debate tonight. We talked about it last week.
A
debate in Smithtown. No, he backed out of it. Actually, okay, he didn't technically back out of it, but basically, his operatives contacted the church where this was going to be held in Smithtown and convinced them that there was going to be a left wing mob and there were safety issues, and the church canceled the debate. That's what happened. That's the tactic. That's the whole dialogue about the left-wing mobs. And
they couldn't get permits for the cross they wanted to.
There has not been a single debate. Not at all. If you look up debate between Lee Zeldin and Perry Gershon, you'll find media calling something that happened a week ago Monday a debate, where each of them spoke separately about the same issue. That is not a debate. A debate is where you actually face off against somebody. What we're trying to do here tonight with people on the phone.
Yeah, that's.
But people don't want to do that. People don't want to have a dialogue. They just want to stick to their position and not listen to anybody else. And that's what Lee Zeldin is doing. And that is what, you know, the only debate I can see right now. There was supposed to be one on News 12 tomorrow. That doesn't seem to be happening. October 29th, League of Women Voters in Hampton Bays. Maybe. We'll see. Maybe Lee Zeldin will cancel that one as well.
No, I think he's afraid of women.
How do you support somebody who doesn't want to talk? This guy hasn't held a town hall in almost 2 years now. You know, and Peter King is much the same way in the other district here on Long Island. And there are just so many people that refuse to talk, that just have their way and don't want to hear any opposition. And, you know, that is cowardly. That is cowardly. And if you support that, that's what you're supporting. It's disgusting. And it's happening all over this country. Not just here, everywhere. Everywhere.
Do you think if vets asked him to speak, he would go and speak to them?
I don't know.
Because he harps on that. He's big into the vet thing. So, I mean.
Well, he was able to push through some legislation that was pretty easy to push through.
Right.
That supported vets.
Okay.
And he apparently did some paperwork for the military at some point. So that makes him a vet. I don't know. I don't want to get into his history, his background, whatever. But, you can't just focus on one issue. You have to focus on more. You have to focus on the people that you disagree with as well as the people you agree with. And what I'm seeing with everybody who is challenging these people, not just in this race, but throughout the country, they are facing off with the people that disagree with them, with the people that are, you know, shouting at them. And that's part of it. If you can't do that, you shouldn't be in it. All right? And that goes for all sides. And unfortunately, too many of us have stopped talking.
Except us.
And our listeners. Phone lines are empty. 631-632-WUSB.
We are raising money for our fall radiothon.
Okay, but I don't want to confuse people. That's not the pledge line.
No, it isn't.
That's for people to just talk and say something that's on their minds in this very important, crucial time in our history. And if we don't care, you're not going to be a part of the history. Someone else will be, and you'll just be following. And if that's what you want, then don't call us.
Anything?
No, not a thing. Not a thing. And, you know, you can be anywhere in the world, actually. In fact, maybe Bobson from Bulgaria will call because he cares about politics more than people here care about politics.
You should get the cricket sound effects going here.
There'll be a cricket, I'm sure.
I think I have it now.
Shall we give this person a try?
They're just going to be silent.
No, let's not be negative. Okay, let's not be negative. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Good evening.
Oh, good. A voice. A human voice.
Indeed.
You're not a computer, right?
Not just yet.
Okay, good. Hang on to that. What's on your mind?
Well, people being involved, you're saying this is a time in our history when the voting population should be involved. That hasn't changed in 200 years. People should always get involved. Unfortunately, one of the negative things in voting, and one of the reasons why I particularly don't vote, if I may refer to the 1972 election, a presidential election. I believe it was the first presidential election where 18-year-olds were given the right to vote.
Okay.
The election involved George McGovern and Richard Nixon. George McGovern was campaigning and had a remarkable, what was a remarkable amount of student support. In the last 9 months of McGovern's election, when he was coming to speak on campuses, he would generally be booked for a university or a college auditorium. The turnouts were so unbelievably large that arenas had to be used, football stadiums on campus. Larger stadiums when it came to New York City. And this was overwhelmingly the outcome of all these campaign speeches that were made by McGovern for a period of 8 to 9 months prior to the election in November. If you're unfamiliar with that election, well, first let me say, you can imagine the number of students or the number of attendees it would be to go from a 3,000-seat auditorium to a 16,000 or 20,000-seat venue.
Right.
Okay. Now, that being said, when November finally came around, George McGovern got one state, the state of Massachusetts, and the District of Columbia in his support. Richard Nixon got every other state. As a matter of fact, when Nixon took office for his second term, one of the great anti-Nixon slogans at the time was, "Don't blame me, I'm from Massachusetts." It seemed unbelievable to any of us at the time that Richard Nixon could have had such an overwhelmingly successful election result. Judging from the number of kids that were attending, and I'll say kids at the time, because for the most part, McGovern's supporters were university students. They were mostly anti-war people.
Right.
And civil rights people.
I'm looking at the results by popular vote. By popular vote, it was Nixon had 46 million, McGovern had 28 million. A pretty decisive victory, but if you look at the Electoral College, 520 to 17, which is insane.
He won in the Electoral College. Hold it, I have to start the car.
Okay, but he also won the popular vote, and that is depressing in and of itself. But keep in mind, it was a different time then. You know, do we really have to look back on that as a reason not to get involved today?
Well, my point is this. I never really believed the results of those, the results of the count, vote count. I believe that every other vote for McGovern became a vote for Nixon somehow, in the manipulation of the voting devices. I became very paranoid and resultingly disenfranchised.
But you know, this is more of a local thing. You know, your vote counts every much, you know, as someone else's in electing a representative or a senator. Yeah, there's gerrymandering, but you have more of a chance, at least, of having your vote count, unless you truly believe there's no difference between one politician and the other.
No, well, that's not my point. I would hardly agree with you in the vacuum of honest vote counting. I don't believe honest vote counting takes place.
Okay.
I don't believe in the system at all. And I love this country. I love the idea of this country. I love the idea that I might have a say, and I love the idea that even if I have a say globally, I can act locally without having what's happening to that caravan happen to me.
Right. Well, here's my question.
I just don't think there's any point to these elections.
Well, let me just ask you this. Now, you say you might have a voice, and you believe that your vote won't be counted properly. But do you think there's a chance that it will be counted properly?
Of course, there's always the opportunity.
So, is it worth that chance to show up at the polls and just vote? You know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But at least, you know, if there's a 25% chance, why not?
By all means, I don't. I'm not trying to dissuade anyone. I'm simply trying to point out a position that that as a university junior, or possibly university senior at the time, paved my politics for the future.
Can you imagine how people, 40, 50 years in the future, are going to look back at our politics of today and how that might shape them?
Well, let me say, riddle me this, if you will. Since only 50% of the voting, the registered voters show up for a presidential election, or less than 50% of the registered voters show up for a presidential election, what number of that 50 to 52% that don't show up are members of my generation?
Mm-hmm.
I think overwhelmingly, I'm 66. I think overwhelmingly, the number of people in that percentage that does not show up at the polls are members of my generation.
Oh, I don't know. A lot of older people show up to vote even in the off-year elections. They just don't vote the same way I'd like them to vote.
I'd be glad to hear that. If that could be documented, I'd be glad if that's the case. But I think the apathy exists mostly in my generation. I have no idea what age you are. I presume in your 20s or 30s.
Why thank you. But no.
You're older? You're older?
Yeah, but, I'm sort of in between the two, I guess. But, You know, you can't make assumptions because there are so many politically active people that are your age or beyond. But they, you know, and I think in most cases they won't agree with your point of view. But I think there's never an excuse to just not express yourself. And I'm glad you called us. I'm glad you voiced your opinion on the air because that does count for a lot. But I do hope, you know, you get involved in voting as well, because I think there's a good chance your voice will be heard.
Irrespective of voting, a little revolution is not a bad thing once in a while.
I agree. In fact, it's a healthy thing. It's something that happens in almost every country. But let's get past the election before we start talking about the revolution. Thanks so much for your call. And I'm glad we got a good call tonight. And I want to move on to something else, though, because, Kyle, you already voted.
I did.
And here, you know, you don't get suppressed. I got to say, there are so many people who are getting suppressed, whose name has a hyphen in it or is spelled slightly differently, and they're told they're not allowed to vote, mostly people in poorer or minority communities that are victimized in other parts of the country. You are from Washington State. You're here in New York. You were able to get your ballot forwarded to you, and you're able to vote by mail, and you had a great time doing it.
Yeah, I did. I voted last night at the dinner table type, sort of while listening to the radio or TV. I was listening to WSB. Let's just leave it at that.
I heard you cackling.
Sure.
All kinds of things that you enjoyed voting for.
Apparently. And I had a margarita. No, I didn't.
Well, you've got this great newspaper out in Seattle called The Stranger. And, you know, even if you don't live in Seattle, read The Stranger. It's online, and they always have these recommendations for how to vote and who to vote for. It's hilarious. It's informative. It's democracy, and I wish we had that everywhere.
I'll confess, Dan Savage is the editor over there, or works on the what's called as the Stranger Election Control Board, SECB, and they interview and talk to all the candidates in Washington. And yeah, and since I think the 2004 or 08, I've been following their voter guide, and it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek version of the traditional King County voter guide that goes out with all of the ballots. My parents used to go and vote absentee over dinner and go through the King County pamphlet. Well, Stranger puts out their own version, and let's just say it has a lot more profanity than the King County official voters guide. But what it does do is it gives you a real breakdown. They actually talk to these people. They are kind of no holds bar and very real about things. They're not sugarcoating. This is not, you know, PG or even G rated. This is like, you know, in the mud, straight up politics. What are these people really doing? What are they about? I think one person they had used a stock photo the campaign gave them, and the photographer tried to sue them for $30,000.
Wow.
They will remark about any little thing you do, but they're real about it. And it is a really a joy to read when you're going through and choosing. And I find that I'm very, very much aligned with The Stranger personally. Maybe it's that I am from King County in Seattle. But I also find that Dan Savage does a great job representing the city, and through The Stranger has a great outlet there. But I got into radio listening to him. They did Savage Love Live on 90.3 KBCS out in Seattle. So I've been listening to Dan Savage for a very long time, and no doubt it inspired me to get involved in other community stations such as WSB. And I still apparently I follow his work through the Election Control Board. But The Stranger and everything they do, I could not thank them enough. That is really noble work. And to write in such a fun and creative way, especially when things seem bad, is really encouraging as a voter.
But the system itself works
fantastic.
So well, regardless of your political bent. I mean, you could be, you know, conservative as Reagan, and still you'd be able to do the same thing that you did as far as voting when you're out of the state. But do you want to go over anything that you voted for or against, or the kinds of things that are on the ballot? We only have a couple minutes left.
There are some funny things. There's this guy, Tim Iman, who does a lot of initiatives, and there were a couple things on here that were basically directly a result of his antics. So one thing basically saying that you have to acknowledge that you saw some bill or some law, you have to know what the price increase is or something to that effect. I think it's initiative 940 or something in there. But there's a couple different things. Specifically, the what is it? Oh, food taxes. That was one of the initiatives. Exempting certain beverages. There's a firearms bill, which is sadly not that radical, but it is basics.
What does it say? What's it for?
The measure requires increased background checks, training age limitations, and waiting periods for sales or delivery of semi-automatic assault rifles. Criminalize non-compliant storage of authorized use upon unauthorized use. Allow fees and other enact other provisions. Basically, the most comprehensive new package in Washington in a while, and really just the basics. But I voted for that.
Okay, and hopefully the rest of the state of Washington won't drag that vote down, because seems pretty common sense. I believe that's what we have here in New York.
The last thing, there's a levy for education that I voted for, because I'm constantly complaining about opportunity. I had all the opportunities in the world, and I struggled myself. That may not be everybody's experience, but I think the financing of education in Washington State is a big issue for me, because I think students really need more support than they do. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of help, and I can't possibly imagine what it's like for people who don't. So
and you flourished with that help, and I think, you know, there's no shame in not, you know, being straight A or whatever, you know, getting the most out of education, getting the most out of life experiences. So that's something that's a community effort.
The one thing I did notice on this last thing I'll say is that there's all these judgeships and positions for justices that are uncontested. So. Uh-huh. You didn't have a choice, and I was going to, like, I'll probably date myself. I was going to write in Beavis and Butthead, like, alternating.
You can't have two candidates. You're going to be
no,
like,
just go Beavis for
Butthead.
One, do Beavis, then the next one, you know, do Butthead, then next one, do Beavis, and just keep switching back and
Beavis
forth.
Beavis can't be more than one judge.
But so. I'm not that cute with my vote, okay? Okay?
You know it's what? The same thing here, though. The judge is always running unopposed. No one wants to be a judge.
Okay, I'm going to count these. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. There's like 18 justices unopposed that I had no choice but to vote for.
We have the same thing here. I think the same thing is everywhere. I think that the only fair way to do it is like jury duty. You know, in the mail, you get a thing saying, guess what? You're a judge. And you become the judge for a couple of years, because nobody wants to be a judge, apparently. And maybe we get some fair systems that way. Hey, we're out of time. But Kyle, I just want you to look at our caller made me call this up on Wikipedia. But look at the map of the United States back in 1972 as far as the red and the blue. They didn't have red and blue then.
Wow.
But look how red the country was.
What is that, Rhode Island that's blue?
Only Massachusetts and Washington. Only Massachusetts and Washington, D.C. were blue. That's it. Everything else was red. So, you know, it might not mean much, but to me, that's somewhat of a sign of progress, that we're getting somewhere, and that we shouldn't be, you know, too negative. I know I'm negative right now, and I'm mostly negative because not enough people call, and not enough people are standing up for their rights and speaking out and being vocal and being seen. But you know what? You got 2 weeks to make me feel better, and I hope you do, because, you know, I really think this is important. I really think a lot is at stake here. And what happens in 2 weeks will define this nation for quite some time. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. Please call 631-632-6901 and support this amazing station where we can spout viewpoints of all sorts and listen to people from all backgrounds. And we will be back again next week, and Finn will be up next. In the meantime, here is a public service announcement from none other than Willie Nelson. Good night.
Who's in there, vote them out. That's what election day is all about. The biggest gun we've got is called the ballot box. So if you don't like who's in there, vote them out. Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out.
And when they're gone, we'll sing and dance and shout. Then bring some new ones in. We'll start that show again.
you don't like who's in there, vote them out. Bunch of clowns you voted in. Election day is coming round again. If you don't like it now, if it's more than you'll allow, if you don't like who's in there, vote them out. Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out. Vote them out.
And when they're gone, we'll sing and dance and shout. Bring some new ones in and we'll start the show again. And if you don't like who's in there, vote them out. Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out.
That's what election day is all about. The biggest gun we've got is called the ballot box. So if you don't like who's in there,